This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Slightly less, but really, right. It's a matter of.
I'm already doing well.
Inches. All right. Do you want anything to drink?
No, I'm good. I'll stay. I'll stay thirsty.
Yeah. Yes.
Hey, I brought you this. I brought
you my God bless. Thank
my
you so
newest
much.
Book.
Awesome.
And I hope you don't mind. I wrote down some words, just keywords.
Words, keywords.
Please. Yes.
For you or me?
For me. For me, just because we're gonna. I figured I'd have like some words ready for.
Sense, oh, I got you. I understand. I didn't know. Okay, sure.
Wait, let me get.
I mean, the whole idea is just to have a conversation.
I understand. Yeah. I mean, for me, this is improv because I'm not used to it, and I had to figure. I just have a couple of crutches to fall back on, but I won't.
You're not even going to need them. We're okay. We're just going to have a conversation, and now. When I walked in here, it was, I'm going to say, roughly 45 degrees warmer. But now it's cooled down.
Is the temperature okay?
I might just go get my hoodie.
Okay.
How about that?
Go for it.
Do you mind if I get my hoodie?
Great.
How's the temperature for you, Ruben?
I'm perfect. Yeah. Okay, this is good.
Well, you got them.
I got layers that I can adjust as needed.
We just need to reset camera 3, and then we'll be
so this is video too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, oh, too. I should have.
All over.
Should have dressed for it. I guess I guess I actually did.
Yeah, you did.
Come
you
to
did.
Think, but this is what I would have worn.
Yeah, I was just gonna see if it's
crazy. This might be too much. I tell you, I usually smart about what I wear, but when I left the house, it was about
it was cold.
44 degrees.
Yeah, winter.
And then when I, it's a hoodie, but it's more coat.
Yes. You could borrow my sweatshirt hoodie. Would you rather have that one?
Is it all free on the subway with that?
I was on the subway with it.
I appreciate it. I'll stick with mine.
This is a sensory issue, I think. Yeah.
All right, let me get back to where my mic is. Get all this. And at the end, I'm going to ask you a question from my daughter, who's 6 years old.
Good.
All right.
Good.
Good like that I'm going to ask you a question, or good that she's
good
six?
That it's from a 6 year old. That's I love those questions. I love. I'm an old dad at heart.
Oh, yeah. I talk about at heart. Oh, I'm literally an old dad.
I am an old dad. I have old kids.
Yeah.
But I'm just like a dad at heart.
You're that's a dad
my,
of old people.
It's my main thing. I'm a dad of old people.
Okay. You went to Tufts.
I did.
Oh, yeah. I lived in Boston for 9 years. So
I know.
Mission Hill.
I know. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't live in Mission Hill. I just was referencing Mission Hill.
Mission Hill.
Tufts adjacent community.
Tufts is, Somerville. I just can't hide my Somerville pride. That's a.
I lived in Somerville for 2 years. I want to say.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I lived in right behind Davis Square and right behind Porter Square.
Oh yeah, that's,
yeah,
that's
two
it.
Different.
That's my. That's my hood. Yeah. That's,
is that where you grew up?
No, I grew up in New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah, but I spent 7 years in Somerville and Davis Square that whole area.
And I moved there when my then girlfriend at the time. I guess I don't have to, I don't have to qualify it. She's she's not still my girlfriend, and I also have a wife. But no, so my girlfriend and I were going to make the big move to move in with each other, and we were trying to pick a place that we could afford. And we ended up in Somerville at Davis Square because of Red Bones.
Red Bones?
What?
Wait a minute.
How do you not know what Red Bones is?
What was that?
Red Bones was the anchor for when the kind of creeping gentrification came into Davis Square.
Right.
Red Bones was like the first kind of restaurant that didn't really seem to fit. Because it was very working class.
When I was there, it was a long time ago. It was working class. It was not at all like it is now.
When I moved there as well. I mean, when were you there?
I was there. I guess I left in 87.
Oh, I probably moved in. Yeah, probably around 90.
I was hoping that maybe we were neighbors. So it must have been there. I don't know.
Now it's like it's a well-known. It's very good. And I try to go whenever I'm back, but it was initially. I'm trying to think of the street side. Is like a side street? You know where the it was the Rosebud. I want to say
Rosebud. Yeah. Is that that's the main.
So it was across. Yeah. The street from the Rosebud and down north about a block and then down one of those tiny
passed
side
by
streets.
Many times, but I don't know. You know, when I was there, I was a student and I don't know, eating out it is now, but it wasn't a priority then. I didn't eat out.
Oh, yeah. Same here. That was a special thing. And I'm a big fan of barbecue and good barbecue. And I'm a snob when it comes to barbecue. Yeah. And it was good, and they had, now it's all one big thing, but they were adjacent to a real divey old man bar. I can't remember the name of it. I'll try to think of it. And for the first, I'd say 3 or 4 years, maybe even 5 years, they had kind of a friendly relationship with the bar. And they had there was a door that went through, and they just sort of removed the doors, and the bar was a bar. So you'd have the barbecue and people coming in, and all walks of life, families, single, right. Young kids, college kids, whatever, and then this real Somerville working class, guys who were in there. Starting to drink at 2, and then and one of the best things, it is, I have a handful of experiences from Boston where I go, that's the most Boston thing ever. But these guys, so it was when the Celtics had Reggie Lewis. So this you can date it because Reggie Lewis wasn't there that long. For the first time, they were fielding an all-black team. It was the first time. So, late 80s.
Yeah, they were late. They were begrudgingly late throughout the process.
they have a fan base to consider. And these guys are sitting there, these old, Boston, working class.
Boston, yeah.
Just... no Bonnies at all. And we'll talk about that in a second, what Bonnie means. But they're just sitting there and, they're drinking and they're watching the Celtics game. It's up on the two TVs on either corner. And I remember they had Ed Pickney, I'm trying to think of the other guys they had on the team, but I'm spacing on this. But it was all, they were all black players, and whoever had the ball, it didn't matter. They weren't saying this ironically or at all. They were like, come on, Reggie. Because Reggie Lewis was their star player, but it was the first time. They're all Reggie. Come on, Reggie. So whoever got the ball.
At least they're rooting for
whichever
them.
Black guy got the ball with at least, the Celtics jersey on. Come on, Reggie. Come on, Reggie.
At least we found a way for them to root for black people in a very specific way. So
it was
that's nice.
Pretty awesome to watch. And then now, so are you familiar with the term Barney?
Barney, no.
Okay, so
am I even from there? I'm not picking up in any of these.
So Barney, I didn't know this until I was there, and somebody told me about it. And there was a band that called themselves the Barneys, and it was. It's also such a Boston thing where, they. You know, I would say quite easily Boston is the most provincial city place I've ever lived in.
Absolutely.
And I've lived all over the place. And it's just to a different degree. It's really provincial and prickly and defensive and just weird. And and so it's so provincial that just the tiny little hamlet of Somerville had their own derogatory, derisive word for people who weren't from Somerville.
For everyone else? Like barbarians and in Greek times?
They would call them Barneys. Fucking Barneys. Look at this fucking Barney. Where are you from, Methuen? You know, he'd be like, Somerville's tiny. It's like being like
everyone outside of Somerville.
Everyone outside of Crown Heights.
In Somerville, was it Sully's?
I don't know. But they had a derisive word for people that were literally six blocks away.
No, I never heard of that. Like, and you know, I was in my bubble. I really wasn't, because I was a student. Mm-hmm. I was with other students, and we were from all over the place. And we'd go to, there was one bar I would go to a lot that was very local, that was in, I think, closer to Cambridge, maybe in Cambridge on Mass Ave, called Nick's Beef and Beer House.
Oh, yeah. I remember Nick's. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Did I love Nick's Beef and Beer House. Yeah. They had those those fake logs you can put, like you plug them in and they sort of glow and you can put them in like a fireplace.
Yeah.
The walls were lined with them for some reason. That was the lighting.
Oh, I don't remember that. But that's smart. I like that. That's cool. It's got to
be a very mistake. I remember I was there once. We were there at night for drinks and I realized that I had been there for lunch and dinner, and this was my third time there.
That's a good day. That is a good day.
Because it was so cheap, and I just loved the waitresses and the whole vibe of the place. So that was my one blue-collar hangout.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the great things about Boston, and there's a lot of things that are, you know, kind of fucked up, but there are a lot of great things about Boston, and one of them is it was a great place to be poor and to be a poor student, because there were multiple places where you could go for like a happy hour. And I think they passed a law actually much later, but you could get a pint at like Harvard Gardens, I think had this, or not Harvard Gardens. It was around the corner on a, Charles Street, but it was or right on the corner there, but in Back Bay, but it was just a shitty dive bar, and on Wednesdays, I think it was like chicken wing night, and they'd get a platter, you know, like those big tinfoil things, chicken wings, and it's all you can eat. You buy a pint, and you could have a pint of beer, nurse it, and eat.
That was,
and there were a lot of those type of places.
In those days, all you can eat was literally all you can eat.
Yeah.
You would not leave a thing on the table if there was any room.
But yeah, it worked, and it was a decent place to. No,
that's great. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of young people who are on budgets, and so everything is sort of geared towards them, much more so than New York. I get the sense New York is a tougher place.
I would not want to be here if I didn't have money, and I you know, didn't have money most of my life, and I sort of struggled in all those places, but it was a lot easier to do in Boston and even Los Angeles than New York.
Even Los Angeles, because I've never lived there, but I figured.
I mean, you gotta have a car.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, there's buses. I used to take a bus from Koreatown to Cloverfield in 26th, I think, to go to three buses. So I'd get one bus from Koreatown would take me into a part of like wherever it was, Culver City, and then I'd get on the blue bus to Santa Monica. And I worked in this warehouse. And But I mean, that was
three
not
buses
difficult.
To a warehouse job. Really? Not.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pain in the ass. It's not fun, but it wasn't difficult. Right. You know, you allot for the time. You get on the bus, you go, and on the bus, you can read and do whatever you want.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
Well, not whatever you want. I tried my drag reading time shows there, and they didn't care for it. I was way ahead of the curve on that. Yes. And,
now, when I would go to LA, for a while, I was going sort of back and forth because I had my obligatory, you know, dalliance with Hollywood for my comic stuff. And every single time I would go, I would do it over and over again. I'd always forget. I'd like look on the map and say, oh, that's only like a mile away. So I'll walk that.
and every single time, knowingly.
Every single time I'd end up on like an overpass with like a little narrow, a little concrete, you know, slab with a homeless guy in a shopping cart. And the two of us are like inching along.
Oh, and dude.
It happened over and over.
I just got back from LA about a week and a half ago. And while I was there, I was recording some of these podcasts at the HeadGum office in Silver Lake or Echo Park, wherever. And I purposely got an Airbnb. I was there for like 3 days that was walkable. And
Literally walkable.
Yeah. And it was about, I think it was 2.2 miles. Great. Good walk there. Good walk home. And it was exactly like you're describing. And I saw so many human shits, just a lot of human poos. And yeah, the situation is, you know, the homeless, mentally ill situation is out of hand there.
Oh, yeah.
And, but yeah, on like this embankment, like you look on a map, it's like, what a lovely walk that must
right,
be.
That's right.
And it probably was back in 1955.
So so you're still making that mistake, even with all your experience there.
I mean, I know what's going to happen, and I just sort of do it. But
if
it's
I go
not
back, I'm sure I'll do that again.
Yes. Pleasant Acres.
Yes.
Now we'll get back to this, but I want to show this, mention this. So Ruben is I'm a huge fan, as you know.
Oh, thank you, man.
I think your work is just it's so succinct. You can do in 3 to 9 panels what some people can't do in an hour monologue or you know, a 15-minute spot on the news or whatever. it's just perfect. So Tom the Dancing Bug, an unfortunate name, but that's what it is, is the name of the comic written by and penned by Ruben Bowling. And you started way, way back, right?
I started back when I was, well, in school, living in Somerville. So, but I started in, this strip started in 1990.
1990?
In an alternative weekly, 33 years ago. Yeah, that's a long time to be doing this.
It's just, I mean, I love your stuff. As I said, it's just.
Well, thanks. Wow, God, that means so much to me coming from you.
Well, reserve.
No, because I'm so, you know, happy and proud to be here, and the fact that you know, are a fan of my stuff is just amazing to me.
And twice nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. Twice.
Twice lost.
Twice lost. Well, you know, would you rather have two nominees or one win?
One win, right?
No.
One win,
because
for sure.
Here's the thing. And I say this as a roughly 11-time loser of things. I've won. I've won a couple things, but I've mostly been nominated. And there's a lot of stuff I was not nominated for. In fact, almost all of it.
Lots
of
stuff.
The fact that you're nominated means, and I know the all the stuff that's out there, right? There are, you know, hundreds, right, of potential nominees. And then you're one of five, right? And that is so, to be taken, considered from that pool of 200 and the top five, in a sense. And then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what, you know. And then it's a smaller. It's also a much smaller voting. So
that's true for the Pulitzer. Not smaller. Actually, it's bigger. Come to think of it, it's the first round is a small group of experts, And then they bring their three finalists to a larger group of just like journalist bigwigs, like, mm-hmm. you know, David Remnick and, you know, the editor of the New York Times, I'm sure, whatever. And so they're the ones who decide on the winner among those three. So the three are chosen by experts, and then
I think you underscore my point. It's better to it's better for the people who know what you do, yes. what they're talking about, to nominate you. That's how I feel about Emmys or Oscars or any of that stuff where you have your peers,
right?
You know, vote, and then it's given to a panel. Whether that panel is larger or smaller is, you know, it depends. But it's given to a panel of a bunch of people who have nothing to do with
experts,
it.
Experts, yeah.
So, you know, should I be, considering an award for editing?
Well,
not really.
Well, here's where I would push back on that. You're saying. I would suggest that it's sort of meaningless, that even the group of experts, it's sort of BS. I don't know how you choose the best. I think so just to be chosen, it's an honor, and I'm so glad they did, but I don't think that the award itself really means anything that you're great or, but I think that there's an advantage to winning in your career, and just like Pulitzer Prize winner becomes the adjective before my name every time I'm introduced.
Right.
Whereas finalist, two-time finalist, that's sort of, you know, so.
That's two-time loser. That's how you're seeing
that's,
it.
That's So, but people don't, that's not, you know, it's like some people don't, who don't know my comic strip, I'll meet them like at a party and I'll have to explain what it is. And, you know, I can tell them sort of on the spot to like convince them that it's something. And, you know, if just say, yeah, well, you know, I want a Pulitzer Prize. That's it. End. Done. It's something.
it's the thing. There is not a whole lot. I mean, I Pulitzer is better than Oscar or
it's
any.
It's incredible that
Kennedy Center honor, my trumpet.
That's huge, yeah.
And perhaps funniest dentist in Worcester, which is a real contest.
And plus you get a mug.
Yeah, you get the mug. Wait, you get the mug for the dentist thing or the?
The dentist thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sure.
Did the Pulitzer Committee not give you a mug?
They gave me a letter.
A letter. How are you supposed to drink coffee out of a letter?
I tried.
It's ridiculous.
I filtered it through the paper.
It's Emma, Google Pulitzer Prize nominating committee not complaining. I'll be diplomatic, but about getting their change letter to mug. Just write that down and I'll know what it means.
So yeah, anyway, it's gotten, you know, awards, and it's been a great adventure for 33 years. For sure. It was great. We met before, the other time we met was in, after you did a show at, Union Hall.
Yes.
You came out from, we had a beer.
I was doing a shooting the shit show.
Yeah. That was fantastic. And it was great. And the thing I remembered, I wanted to tell you is that we were talking, and you were just talking about, and you mentioned your father, and I hope I got this right, but I think you said your father's from Leeds.
Yeah, England. Yeah.
Okay. So you know, I do this thing all the time.
Did you get me a present?
Live at Leeds. I always do this thing where I. Someone will say something and it'll always trigger like a TV show line or a movie, you know, something. And so you said that and I thought, oh, you got that from the CD Live at Leeds, like, you know, that from this and from Todd Margaret.
Right.
But it wasn't until I was walking home that I thought, no, this is the guy who wrote that. It came into my head, but it didn't occur to me that is you. It's just like one of those, like, oh, there's the Live at Leeds. So I thought you were, you know.
I wouldn't make something up based on a weird random thing from a TV show nobody ever saw.
No, I didn't think you were lying. It was just that came into my head, Live at Leeds, that image of the CD
It was interesting because there's all kinds of meta shit in not shit. I don't mean to denigrate it, but
the best the kind of
stuff.
Shit.
Yeah. In the three seasons of the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, but one of them is the fact that he lies. He makes up a lie about his dad being from Leeds, and then has to commit to that lie. But my dad, who is from Leeds, is a like pathological liar, like just a like inveterate.
Right, Todd Margaret level.
Yeah, just a like, what are you like? Just making shit up, crazy shit up that you know isn't true.
Yeah,
not when you're a kid. When you're a kid, you believe it. But you know, as you get older, you're like, wait a minute, he wasn't Donna Mills' boyfriend. You know, not Donna Mills. Who was the woman? She was on like Falcon Crest or. What was the one in that takes place in Denver?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't know.
It was one of those. She was like a lady from one of those. What was the, you know, the not Dallas, but yeah, it was,
Dallas, and then
there's the other one, Denver.
Was it Falcon Crest?
There was Falcon Crest, but it wasn't.
I don't remember. I remember when I was a kid, we were in LA, and they asked us to do like a focus group, and it was for the spinoff of Dallas. And
yeah, that was it. It was.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was called. So I actually saw it. I did see it as a kid.
It was the Carringtons in Denver Oil.
They had like a button, like press this one if you like right. What's going on. Press this one if you don't like it. And I had my finger on it. I don't like this the entire time. Yeah, I'm like 13 years old. I'm like,
you gave it a shot.
I don't. I don't remember what it was called.
Emma, Google. What the fuck was the name of the show? That was like, it was the one with Joan Collins.
Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Dynasty. Dynasty. Was that a spinoff or a competitor?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I'm out of my depth here. I don't know anything about
it. Well, the spinoff of Dynasty. Dallas, which was Corpus Christi, was not very successful. It was just boring. Like sleepy little kind of weird racist town by the water.
They should have made it Somerville.
Yeah. Fucking Bonnies.
Fucking Bonnies. Okay. Yeah. I think my grandmother used to make us ham. I don't know. There must have been some problem because I didn't like my grandmother's hamburgers.
What was this? I don't remember. I was very little. I think that was the problem.
That is a problem. So the next time she came.
Unless that's a euphemism.
The next time she came, my mom and my grandmother said that she went to a restaurant near us called Don's, and they taught her how to make hamburgers, so now they'll be good. So I was like, wow, that's impressive. And I ate it, and I think I liked it. And it wasn't until like I'm an adult, like way like with your father, like I'm an adult, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, she didn't go to Don's and learn how to make hamburgers. She just said that. So yeah. I'd shut my little mouth up and eat her hamburgers.
That lie is practical and is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Fair. It's on me, really.
That really, if you know, there's quite often there are times you're like, how do I shut this kid up? Why? And well, because of the why. Well, and you know,
and
yeah,
then you have to end it.
Learn how to make hamburgers. Yeah. Oh, now I like them.
Well, this was probably the worst lie that was told to me as a kid. So we had different childhoods. I know, in many ways.
That's a blessed childhood, if that's the worst lie you ever got.
I think it really is. It was.
Also, I think that's, I don't, maybe it's just cultural, but nobody, I don't think anybody in my family ever made hamburgers. Like, it just wasn't a thing. Yeah.
No one's making, that's a standard.
No, you're right. I could be wrong. There might've been a time or two when we had hamburgers, but I don't remember it. It certainly wasn't a staple. And we didn't really grill out. My dad wasn't there and then he was gone by the time I was nine, but we weren't like a big, like, hey, hot dogs and hamburgers on the grill this summer.
Yeah, we had the grill. We had the grill too. My dad would make, he made hamburgers he made them like meatballs.
Yeah.
I would always try to say, make them flatter, Dad. And then he'd say, I'll go to Don's and learn. No. Yeah. He made very like
round. Did Don's have good hamburgers?
I guess I must have liked the Don's hamburgers, the Don's Drive-In.
And then the next time you had your grandmom's hamburger, did you go, thumbs up?
I think I did. Good. I think I like, or I thought like, I guess I can't argue with this now. It's just that they cornered me.
How that's very suggestive to say you like them.
Yes.
And I've heard it's a thing that you can do with kids at a certain, there's a tiny little age bubble where you can do this, where you can tell them that they like something and then they'll like it, or that they don't like it. Like you can go and if you tell a kid, this may not only last like a month to a couple months, but you're like, if they eat something and they like it, and you go, that's a roasted carrot, right? It's just I like it. And then they can be the kid that likes roasted carrots. I like roasted carrot, and that's part of their identity. I'm Ethiopian. I'm Jewish. I like roasted carrots, and that's their thing.
That's beautiful.
And
yeah.
you can milk that for like a month or 2 months until they go, hey, I don't like roasted carrots. And all right, well,
my son says he remembers the moment when we kept giving him bananas. He must have been very little, and the moment when he said, "Wait a minute, I don't like this."
He learned to sign it before he could even speak.
Yes, it must have been about that age, because it's like you just feed kids these soft, mushy foods, and he's like eating it up, and suddenly it like turns, like he realizes I'm not enjoying this.
One of my favorite things. I love when babies or dogs sneeze. That's one of my favorite things in the world. But also, babies and dogs do the same thing, where they don't necessarily make a face, but if they don't like something, they'll just push it out of their mouth.
Right.
Not necessarily spit it out in anger, it just comes the other way. If you like go to feed a dog and they don't like it, they just go.
it's going one way, then it's going another.
Yeah. And then the baby just does the same, like, and you got to clean it up. Like, okay, lesson learned.
That's a good incentive to give them tasty foods.
You don't like Ruben's grandmom's hamburgers, fine. So we'll send her to Don's. Do you have...
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the latest, yes?
This book? I'm releasing them. We're doing multi-volume complete Tom the Dancing Bug set. Every comic I've done, in each book is four years worth of comics.
Oh, I see. This is 99 to 2002.
I'm going backwards. So the first one came out right at Trump's election, because I wanted that one to come out. And now we're going backwards. So this is volume three, which is the fifth volume.
So then the other one that I got in the mail was volume seven.
Into the Trump verse, because I'm going backwards. So volume seven came out first. Volume three came out. I'm not going to do the math, and this may not work out, but the fifth.
I pay for somebody to do the math on that.
Because I wanted that first Trump one to come out, and the next one will be volume eight, because I'm ready for the latest one to come out.
And this one has Godman in it.
That one has, does it have Godman in it? Better.
I don't know.
Better. Geez, did he come out in that time? It must be. He must be in there. Yes, for sure.
Okay.
Yes, I made him up in 97 or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So,
Great stuff. I urge you to check it out. But there's also people who are not watching this and only listening. So it's this is the complete Tom the Dancing Bug, 1999 to 2002, volume 3 of 7.
Of now, will be 8.
Of it's, what it's will all, be 8.
Yeah,
on the trail
yeah.
of Tom the Dancing Bug. Man, comics thank you, by Reuben Bowling.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, didn't know that. I was wanting to give that to you as a present. I didn't mean it to be a publicity
problem. Oh, I was going to pay. I thought I was going to pay for it, but I was going to ask you, oh, can I get like some sort of friends and family discount?
10%. But, oh man,
10%?
I blew it. Yeah.
That's what you give. That's your discount to friends. So your family, your mom well, wants a book. My, and you're like,
nana,
sure,
my nana
mom,
made me some good hamburgers. So
yeah, you can have it. Let me knock off 10% since you raised me. That's a bunch of bullshit.
My present to you, as take it for whatever it's worth. But, yeah.
Well, apparently it's worth 10% less than its its market value.
At least 10% off. Yeah. So it's really fun. Thank you for the. You gave me a quote for the first volume that came out for volume 8, and that was
blurbed the shit out of that.
You blurbed the shit out of it. Is right yeah. because you. Do you remember this? You were the only one I had to go back to.
What?
Because your quote,
I was
cringing. I had to do this because I was so embarrassed.
Your
quote had the word shitty in it.
Oh, shitty. Yeah.
And which is fine. This is on me. I've never had cursing in the comic. I don't know why. I'm the Jim Gaffigan.
That's all right.
So I had to go back to you and say, would you mind? At that point 30 years and I haven't, I don't want, you know, my first one to be in the
I haven't
back
made
of the,
a swear.
You'd made a swear. So so I suggested, would you change it? Maybe something else, maybe crappy. And you said, how about bleak? And I said,
Oh, there you go.
I said, this is a wordsmith.
And this bleak is better than shitty.
Better than both. It ended up. So
crappy sounds like you've been asked to change shitty.
Right. Crappy was really
when you
bad.
Read crappy, you're like, crappy oh, they probably wanted suggestion. Shitty, but it they was.
But I was trying
crappy.
To, I felt so embarrassed to go back to you after you were so nice to
me. No, you
this.
Made it better. You edited
I,
it.
Right? I did, but I don't want to
bother
you.
Your own editor. And
but we made it. We honed that quote into the best best blurb it could be.
And it was nominated for a quotie that year.
Thank God it didn't win because really what you want is to be nominated.
You
want to
be nominated.
You want by the quote peers
for a blurb. You know, to be considered one of the best blurbsmiths.
Yes.
Of, 2000, whatever
once
it was.
Once it goes to the to that committee, they don't know about blurbs. What do they know?
What do they know about blurbs? They're writing long form. They're writing prose. They're writing treaties. And no, a blurb is an art form unto itself.
Yeah. So congratulations on the nom.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
The nod.
We will find out shortly whether I have won or not.
Well, it's a long process.
Are you on the board that oversees the voting?
I'm on the board. Yeah.
So do you have to recuse yourself or how does
no,
that work?
No, there's no ethics in that at all.
Oh, okay. No, so it's like every other board.
No, blurbing is, there's no ethics in blurbing. You know that. You'll say, okay. People will say anything
they're
about
whores.
Anything. Yeah. Right. And you trade blurbs. You know how that's done? You know,
it's called log rolling, right?
Log rolling in our times. Yeah.
I know that from Private Eye?
Spy.
Spy. Oh, okay. Spy. Private Eye.
Maybe both.
Do you know Private Eye?
That's English, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know much about it. I know
it is absolutely brilliant. And I wish I understand why we don't have something like that in the States. It's just we're too big. But there it's perfect for the kind of country that territories that the UK is and it's the best of all worlds.
Oh, really? I should check it out.
Private Eye is great.
I should check that out because I have heard of it. I didn't think much of I thought it'd just be another satire thing, but maybe
no,
if it's
no.
That,
well,
if it's that
the,
superb.
The first half is news.
Okay.
Their take on news, and they're often ahead of the curve and they've been around for quite a while. And then the kind of latter half, back half, are more blatantly comic
right.
Things and they
I know they have comics and cartoons because yes. I've seen that there's a British magazine of comics called Viz.
Oh, I have subscriptions to both Viz, or had subscriptions to both Viz and Private
Eye. I should have subscribed to that. I'm obsessed with it. It is so disgusting, disgustingly hilarious. It is just so gross. There's stuff in there. I'm obsessed with it. That the artists are amazing. It's like they take like the old style British comic of like boy adventures and, mm-hmm. and mysteries and just make them like comics that are just disgustingly hilarious.
Well, yeah, they do several kind of genres. They do the there was a
adventure, not yeah, all the, kinds of
what there was like a very cartoony like they're. Equivalent of the Dead End Kids type of thing, like we're just but then they have Biffa Bacon, they have a lot of they make fun of the North a lot. And,
yes. It's amazing how different culturally it is, or how many things that I think are funny but I just don't get. I just there's you know like the equivalent of like Barney's, you know,
but you get the context.
Yeah, I do, I have to like catch on. And sometimes you don't get something and it's still hilarious because you just know, yeah. You just know there's something funny behind it.
I don't think, or actually I'm thinking of one time that I've laughed as hard as I've laughed when I was on a plane. And, you know, part of it is altitude and you have a few drinks, but right. I was reading their Viz Top
Tom
Tips.
Tom the Dancing Bug? No.
And I had a copy of Viz and I was reading Top Tips and I was like laughing, crying at some of them. They were just
the tips of like things you can do, like household tips and
I'm going to do it a disservice if I try to, you know, paraphrase one, but they're just the thing is funny. And there's some that are just sort of base and gross, but there's a lot of clever, funny.
Yeah.
I love Viz. I love Private Eye. They're two very different things, but they appeal to the two different parts of me.
Oh, you're.
And I learn a lot about British politics from Private Eye. I learn about what's going on, and you know, I lived there for a couple of years, and that's why I get it every week and or every biweekly.
Is that where you learned about these when you were living there?
Yeah. And then when I came back, I subscribed to them for a while. they're just and one of the greatest thrills of my I had gotten a copy of Private Eye, and I remember I was back here. I was reading it. I was I must have got it and taken it on the plane when I was coming back to the States, and because I remember I was at home and I was leafing through it. And it's one of those things where I'll start to read chronologically, cover to cover, but you don't have to. So I was like flipping around, like I'm gonna go see. What, you know, Sood's Corner, where they have quotations from people just being pretentious, you know, pseudo-intellectual, whatever.
Oh, pseudo-corner.
Yeah, Sood's Corner.
Yeah.
And they got these little things, you know, Lovey's is always great, which is some, you know, cringy quote by an actor or an actress about their love of theater and how important it is, what it means, and just, you know.
They just collect them and
well, they'll just have somebody over here submit it, and this person said this on, you know, BBC One on the radio, whatever, and then they'll quote it. And it's just like, oh my God, what a embarrassing thing to say. But I was flipping around. Then I came back, and I was just I started reading this little article, and it mentioned something from Mr. Show and had my name in there. And I'm standing in my office going, like, I made it.
Wow, you know? That's
and they also wrote it, the way it was written was presumed a familiarity with me.
But like, doesn't that...
It was a very exciting thing.
I wouldn't guess that would be unusual for you. I would guess that would be...
I've read my name in print, but I haven't read it in something that I... you know, was such a fan of. And
wow. All right.
And it was just exciting.
Yeah. That is cool. But you weren't in the suities.
It was making fun of, ad. They have another section called Ad Nauseam, and it's about, you know, the you know, advertising companies and different things. And they it was some, I believe, if I remember correctly, it was something that was kind of ripping off something we did on Mr. Show. And they mentioned the bit and they mentioned, you know, but it, again, it was,
most,
they didn't like qualify it with like, you know, an American sketch show, da, da, da. They just put it out there.
Of course, you assume, no, that is, for me, that's it's like, thrilling. It's on the Mount Rushmore of comedy. I just loved it.
That's all right, why, well, I didn't want to make this about me.
I don't want to blow smoke, but that is, I mean, there's a comic in there what's that?
Go ahead. Sorry.
There's a comic in, I think it's in this book because it's about Clinton and his impeachment, which would have been covered in that time, where it was, I had supposed to be writing, but instead I'm watching, like binging on Mr. Shows because I think I discovered it after it had been on for a while. So then I watched like three in a row on HBO and I was just like vibrating. Like, you know, sometimes when you're writing, like nothing's funny, like not depressing, just like not everything's boring. Yeah. Like, you know, but then sometimes when the best thing is when you're writing and like everything is funny, that like, that's hilarious. And I was like on that kind of roll from watching that. And I wrote like a comic that I was really proud of and was, you know, got very popular because I was just on that. I remember that specifically. You know, not many things. Usually when you say there's, you know, something's influenced you, it's more of a general thing. This was like a specific thing. Like this comic came from my, like, just being so excited about what I saw.
Well, good.
So anyway, that's just wanted to let you know. And it's in the book.
Is it the kind of thing, like, would I know?
No, there's no reference at all.
You're just inspired.
It just literally inspired me. Yeah. And there's a little bit of business in there. I remember it. It's something like, and people commented on it. It was just a silly thing. You know, how can we possibly solve this? All we've got is this time machine. and that was definitely from like the type of, I was just right. Like, that was a Mr. Show kind of line that was just, like, that would be great. And I just like threw it in there. I had nothing to do with anything else. It's there's no reference to it. It's just, I specifically remember that comic. I'll show it to you after.
Well, now I know what to look for.
The time machine reference.
Yeah, machine reference.
The time machine reference.
I get it. That's great. Well, I mean, that's what, in part, you know, and I'm sure you feel the same way about your legacy of work, like, hey, if it helps somebody else, if it helps
one person,
well, one person isn't that's not great,
that's too few. Maybe five would be terrible too.
I think five's not good either. No. I mean, you want a good
maybe if one
dozen.
Of them is like, maybe if one of those five got nominated for something,
sure, then would count for 25. Yeah. You want a baker's dozen, which is 13, because the baker always makes and doesn't pay for it. And that baker should be fired and made an example of.
Wow, that's a strong take suddenly.
I don't think it's strong. I don't know where that came from.
That suddenly you're like a, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a capitalist all the way. So if you know, that's, you can bitch about wage theft all you want, but that's CEO theft. When a baker is working, you know, for a multinational conglomerate, say Archway Cookies,
right,
and he's making cookies, and he makes a dozen quote unquote cookies, but guess what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's a dozen, but there's one extra cookie. Wait, where's that going to go? The baker's going to take it.
Why not?
And he's going to take it and smuggle it and take it home to his sick child.
Wait, he takes it home? I thought he gives it to the consumer against the interests of the conglomerate. He should give it to the conglomerate.
No, he's taking it for his sick. He has a child with rickets.
It's selfish.
Look, I'm sorry your kid has rickets. I didn't even know that was a thing anymore. But
I didn't think baker's dozens was a thing anymore. Do they still do that?
Yeah, it's 13.
13?
Yeah, it's a shortcut. It's a quicker way to say 13. A quicker way to say 13 is a baker's dozen. So listen, 13, two syllables. A baker's
yes.
dozen. Six syllables.
All right. Yeah, it's quicker.
So it's a quicker way to say, and what do you think of when I say a baker's dozen? What do you think of immediately?
13.
Yeah. Now, when I say 13, what do you think of?
The movie, the bar mitzvah? A bar mitzvah?
Oh, you're a Jew. Is that what you, okay. I thought it would
it
be.
It goes both ways?
Yeah. And no, then also haunted, like 13 is unlucky. Haunted, yeah. So a haunted baker's dozen.
There was
when I say 13 and you're thinking all that, then you're getting distracted and you're not really thinking about 13. That's why I say baker's dozen when I want you to think about 13. So you think about 13. If I say 13, you're going to think about a baker's dozen. And what is the origin of that phrase? And we really don't think about a baker's dozen anymore. It's not used. See, your mind is off on the fucking races.
Which seems like a waste of time.
It's a terrible waste of time. Yeah.
So you shouldn't use baker's dozen. You're wasting everyone's time with all these diversions.
No, Ruben, you should use baker's dozen in place of 13, because then you'll think of 13th floor. So when I'm in an elevator and I'm holding a bunch of stuff, right? I got four iced coffees and I'm struggling with them. Somebody's in there. Hi, what floor are you on? Baker's dozen. And then they hit 13. But guess what? There is no 13th floor because the Japanese are scared of it. So we don't have 13th floors in a lot of hotels because we want Japanese people to come visit and stay in the hotel.
Is it Japanese? Because my aunt's building had no 13th floor and she lived in the 14th. Well, so she wasn't fooling anybody.
Well, you fooled the devil. That. The devil always gets tricked. Devil comes into the elevator with death, you know, and a cloak and a scythe. Oh, and he's like, let's go get all those people on the 13th. Wait a minute. This thing doesn't have 13 floors. They skipped right over it. Oh, shucks.
That's why she lived a long and happy life, I guess, which is true.
That's the key to longevity is not living on the 13th floor. Or changing the name of your floor from 13 to 14.
13 to 14.
And tricking the devil at his own game. What a dumb game. What a dumb devil.
Fantastic.
No, but really, a baker's dozen is when you take an extra loaf.
Yeah. And you take it home.
Take it home.
Take it home. And I didn't even know about that. I didn't even know that was going on.
Yeah,
I don't own a conglomerate.
You know you should talk to about this is Elizabeth Warren.
Hmm.
I bet she'd have something to say.
Our senator from Massachusetts. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And you're in New York now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how Schumer would. He's not going to.
Schumer's not going to care. No, it's Warren or nobody.
Would you move back to Massachusetts and get residency there?
Go to Redbones. Somehow. Mm-hmm. I have to try that.
It's still there. I can't believe, but no, wait, have you gone back to?
Yes, for sure. My daughter my oldest daughter lived probably the way you described it, like two blocks away from it.
Do you know where the old Candlepin Bowling was?
Yes.
Okay, so about two, but I would say it's in between Rosebud Diner
I think we've talked about it you and I, but various people and I have talked about going in and didn't go in.
Okay, well, that's different than not knowing. Now, wait a minute.
This is a very vague thing, but I think I may have been worried that I'd be called a Barney because I really wasn't from Somerville. I was living there. But
you were telling on yourself in so many ways. Yeah, so you do know about Redbones. You do know about Barney because
it's all coming back. Because once you said Candlepin Bowling, I remember there was something near there. Candlepin Bowling is one of the best things about New England.
It's that
they have their own kind of bowling.
Yeah. Other bowlers. Your superior bowling.
Right. loves. We're going to have this weird thing with you can hold a ball.
It's a smaller ball.
It's a smaller ball and straight smaller sticks.
Things. And it's their own thing. And God love you. Yeah. All right. And we're going to call a milkshake a frap, but we call a milkshake milk with syrup in it.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Milk with, that's what they call a milkshake? Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that. I just would get frats.
I think now more and more people are coming around to the universal. What a milkshake is. But yeah, a frap was a milk, what we considered a milkshake. And if you got a milkshake at like an old school, old place, it would be, you know, like chocolate milk. Or milk
and syrup.
Milk and flavored
no,
syrup.
No ice cream.
No.
No. Wow. Well, that makes sense, really. You shake, you get, put milk in it, stir it up. There's no ice. There's no.
Yeah,
where's the ice cream? Why doesn't milkshake have the word ice cream in it?
Yeah, but also frap.
Frap is, who knows? Yeah, that's just such a New England, just out of left field.
It sounds vaguely French.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's got.
And I think frappere is a hitter or batter, because I went to an Expos game, an old Montreal Expos game, and they would, you know, announce everybody in French and like, there's a frappe, you know, if I was hearing the word correctly.
When I went to a Montreal Expo game, I went to Montreal with a friend in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Probably you were getting ready to move to Somerville.
Yeah.
We went to Montreal on a road trip. We go to an Expos game. And I was surprised going to Montreal that they actually spoke French seriously. Like, I thought it was sort of like a cute like gimmick, like, you know, we're gonna how speak American. A little French, and but everyone will speak English, really. And there are
French,
especially, I think it's changed now. There's probably more English now, but at that time there was, yeah. So I go to get us like hot dogs and beers, and I'm so flummoxed by, you know, trying to negotiate it without speaking French. I get them, I go back to our seats, we're sitting there eating them, and the lady who sold them to me, I see her walking down the aisle and seeing me and like running up to me. And I'm like, oh hi, mm-hmm. How are you? And she begins talking to me in French. And I'm like, what's going on? And someone nearby says, you forgot to pay.
Oh, wow.
I was, I must've been like, wow, I completed that transaction successfully, even though I don't speak the language.
This is pre-cards. This is pre...
would have been cards, but I just didn't pay at all. I got my stuff and walked away. And she went and found me.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
No.
Even though they speak French, you're still not allowed to just take food.
I learned my lesson. I thought, you know, French would have different ways, but
I learned. And it's Quebecois. It's not, you know, they'll be the first to tell you.
Quebecois,
Two little anecdotes regarding Montreal. One, when you went, this isn't an anecdote, it's just a experience, but when did you go to the stadium by taking the subway?
I don't remember. We didn't. Oh, no. We had a car because we were on a road trip, but I don't know if we would have driven with, I don't remember.
It's one of the coolest things, because I didn't know that this is what happened. We were just taking, my friend and I went and just took the, and I'd never been to Montreal. I'd never been out of the country at this point. And we took the subway, you know, from town, you know, in the city to the Expo Stadium, and the subway, you know, that's the stop, like Expo Stadium, and you go out just like you're leaving any subway, and you go up the stairs and you go to the exit signs, and you are in the stadium. You're basically in the kind of in the outer arena concessions area.
Wow, it's Olympic Stadium, indoor, an indoor stadium.
It was really cool. I was not expecting that. I you know, took the subway to Expo, expecting, okay, like my sole experience with going to games is like you get off the subway or, you know, drive a car or whatever, and you're in the parking lot, you see the stadium, you walk towards it, and you get, go through the, and this is your, it you're just dumps you off stadium. You're in there.
What about ticketing? Is that free?
No, you have to go through
Or did someone chase you and say, wait a minute, you have to.
The only thing that was free was hot dogs and beer, and that you're allowed to just walk up and take. There's a secret word that you say in French, and if you don't know it, then But I had a very similar experience where, same trip. It was the first time I'd ever been outside of the country. I want to say this is 90, I don't know, 90?
90. Let's say. So you just moved into Somerville.
Yeah, it's all Somerville-centric. Everything revolves around Somerville. There's BC and AD, and all about when I moved to Somerville. And my friend Jonathan and I went And I went to get a coffee, and I, you know, we're in the hardcore French speaking part, and I, which I don't know at the time. And I just go, hi, yes. Could I get a large coffee, please? And the girl was roughly my age, just staring at me and, coffee. And she speaks to me in French, and I don't understand what's happening. Also, I haven't had coffee yet, so it's doubly confusing. And I really don't understand what's happening. She's just staring at me. And then I don't remember how either it occurred to me or somebody said something, but it was she wanted me to say cafe.
Oh, instead, she understood you.
Oh, she understood me. I didn't say the word cafe.
Wow.
And I remember being really kind of ticked off at that. Yeah, like, that's uncool.
So,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, to not understand would be...
She thought it was disrespectful, I think.
Wow.
Is my guess.
That's what you... That's the reputation of the Parisians. Like, you like mm-hmm. they... You have to...
oh, they got nothing
on... You have
on
to use all their special
Montreal
words.
Montreal folks. Yeah.
I get... Yeah, they're very defensive about it.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
Hamas or Israel? No. All right, let me.
I was prepared for that. I was in the subway and I was wondering. I wonder if that'll come up.
No. Let me
I
ask you this.
Have an answer.
let me ask you this. I should ask everyone that. New York bagel or a Montreal bagel?
Oh, come on, come on! It's the same thing. I mean, they have their own cute little thing there, and God bless them. You know, I think that's fantastic. They have their own language and their own government and their own bagels. And I think that's fantastic. It makes it fun to go there, but it's the New York bagel is the thing. That's the best.
I disagree.
Oh my God.
Wholeheartedly. I much prefer, no, it's not a pretzel. It is not.
I'm just trying to get some heat here.
I much prefer the Montreal bagel. It's, denser. It's slightly sweeter, but not cloyingly sweet at all. It's just a hint of it. And a sesame Montreal bagel toasted with butter is just perfection.
It's great. I loved it. You know,
I prefer it to the New York bagel.
My wife is such a foodie, and then I've sort of come along on that, but especially for foods like bagels, like we just would do like a tour, like just like go to like this bagel place, that bagel place, like try them all. And you know, so that was, it was really fun.
And where do you live? I'll cut it out. What section of town? Okay. This is going by whatever the bagel, you know, that blog, the bagel guy, the guy who went out to every bagel place in New York, just like the pizza guy.
Okay.
But anyway, according to the bagel blog, I live around the corner from Brooklyn's Best Bagel and the third best bagel in all of New York City.
Wow.
And I would agree. They are great bagels. Homemade. They're really, really good.
That's great.
I would still prefer a Montreal bagel.
Wow. Nice. Great. Yeah. Great. You're a great traveler. Mm-hmm. You have an open mind. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. These are my bagels. This is what I'm used to. I have to root for the hometown bagel. There's bagel wars. I mean, people in their own neighborhoods, you know, I feel like the best is in my neighborhood, and the people, I have a lot of friends in the Upper West Side who swear by absolute bagels.
Absolute. I haven't had it.
Bad.
Really?
Oh yeah.
So what's your bagel place?
H&H.
Oh, H&H is good.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
I'm around in Brooklyn on Vanderbilt Avenue. There's the like ye old Brooklyn bagel. They're great.
Yeah, someone really, was really telling good. Me about that. I believe
it's very
not.
Good. It's
yeah,
very good.
Ye old doesn't sound like it would be a great bagel place.
You're right. And it's kind of corny looking, and they do the little gilded gold and you know, painting on the glass, but it's quite good. And that's the one that's considered the best in Brooklyn.
All right. I gotta try.
I love
a food, you know, excursion. I love to go get out there, find bagels for pizza. Absolutely.
bagels for pizza or
bagels or pizza are two things that I will travel around. Yeah. I went to
give me your top three pizza places.
Oh.
I held you out by saying three.
Yeah. Well, I like in New York City.
Yeah.
Because I like New Haven pizza now.
I do too. New Haven's great. That's become my favorite. Let's
All right. Roberta's.
Yeah, I haven't had it, but I know of it. Very famous.
Oh man, I'm blanking. I can't even think of ones I don't like now. See, I told you I wouldn't.
Well, what's
be
your
good
favorite
at
slice?
I think Joe's.
Yeah,
okay. I think Joe's in the West Village, and yeah, I know Joe's that's a standard choice. But yeah. I've come to
that's good.
I've come to love it. I think when I have it a lot, like late at night. You know, one thing is that they're always making, this is to the advantage of any pizza place. It gets popular enough, they're just always making pizzas.
Right.
So it's always fresh. It's not being reheated. So, you know, midnight, you can go in there and a pie is coming out of the oven.
Yeah. Joe's is very good. Yeah. I like, it's a good slice. Have you had the Detroit pizza at Emmy Squared?
Is that on... Where is that? On 23rd Street?
I did have Detroit. I don't know if they have one in Manhattan, but they definitely have one in, I think it was their original pizza place, actually, on it's in Williamsburg.
Oh, okay.
It's really good.
Oh,
really, 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 really good. Now, the first time I had Detroit-style pizza in New York, and it's excellent. Now there's a bunch of them, and they have Jets, which is that chain.
A few years ago, I realized, a few years ago, I had a dream. This was my dream. We have a minivan, an old beat up minivan.
Wait, is this an actual dream, like nighttime dream?
This is true. This is like an MLK dream. This is like
aspirational. Okay, I'll listen to that. I don't want to listen to your dream.
An aspirational goal.
Right.
I think the best pizza is
one day not be judged by the color of your skin.
No, I don't care about that. It's about pizza. So we can fit.
Why would a white guy care about it?
I don't care.
Yeah, judge all
whatever,
all you
whatever
want.
Happens,
I don't
fine.
Give a shit.
Yeah, yeah. Where I'm okay. I go that the best pizza is when it comes right out of the oven, as I said. So you want to order whole pies at a slice place. So you get the pie coming out, it's your pie, but you need eight friends to do that. And what I wanted to do was to...
Well, wait, I'm sorry. Who doesn't get a slice if it's you and eight friends?
Oh, that's true.
So
we need one designated driver.
Yep,
one guy's
okay.
Going to drive.
Who doesn't want to get too fat to drive? I'm too fat to drive.
Yeah, eight friends. Damn, you got me. You're really listening. So one year after Thanksgiving, the Friday after Thanksgiving, my family here, my brother and our kids, and we all got in the minivan, eight of us, and we would drive, went to Brooklyn and drove from pizza place to pizza place, ordering a pizza, by phone as we're driving to it. The pizza comes out hot. The eight of us each get a slice and then you go to the next place.
That's
so
great.
It was, yeah, I was so happy that my... This dream that I had, not a nighttime sleepy dream, but actually happened, and everyone was so happy with it.
That's great. I mean, some people, you know, dream about equality and
it's a good one. I'm not saying that's bad.
And some people dream about getting their whole crew into a van and getting some hot pizza.
That's, you know, who's to judge which is the better dream?
Me. All right. Reuben Bowling, thank you. This is, I'm acting like this is a talk show, but I want people to see it because you're the first person who's come on that has a physical thing.
Now I feel
bad.
I feel like I'm like, it's like I brought a prop. I really just
No. This is for me and I appreciate it, but I want people to know how great this comic is. The Inner Hive, where would they go online to?
Oh, man, thank you. You're doing me a big favor. Yeah, the Inner Hive is my subscription service where you get the comic a day before it's published every week, and that tomthedancingbug.com.
Yeah, and you are writing for Boing Boing now.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Well, I see that because I'm subscribed to the thing, so it's on there.
Yeah, I put on the articles that I wrote for Boing Boing. Yeah, just like little pieces, little this and that, whatever's come up.
Well, it's time to ask you a question from my daughter, and here it is. This is from Marlo, and she asks, Reuben, will you die if you lick a tree?
Wow. Short answer, no. But I'm sure there's all kinds of possibilities. I mean, you could die after doing almost anything. So I wouldn't want to, you know, lead her down the primrose path and say that she won't die if she licks a tree. So the answer, you know, the longer answer is, sure, you could die.
So the short answer is no, but the long answer is
sure,
yes.
Sure. Well, because you're going to die eventually. You could lick a tree and then someday you will die. And you might die from licking the tree. There's no way to really know.
Well, but this is 6 years old. Let's focus on the word if, okay? Because that seems to be the one that you're kind of hung up on. Mm-hmm. So would you die? You're saying yes, regardless of what comes after that. You know, would you die if you hung out and watched TV and had some lemonade? And then your long answer is like, yeah, you're going to die eventually. Yes. So, I mean, whether you have lemonade or not.
That's right. That's
so that's the long answer is, would you die if it's going to be yes.
Because logically.
But when you add lick a tree and make it specific, the short answer is no.
Well, the short answer is always no, unless it's something that is actually extremely dangerous. So the short, so as long as it's something is that's innocuous, the short answer is going to be, no, you won't die if you lick a tree. But when you think about it, if you lick a tree, you will die.
All right. What if you don't lick a tree?
You'll still die.
All right. So then it's not if you lick a tree. It's not. Why if. Not? The word if is what we need to focus on, Reuben.
No, if you lick a tree, will you die from that is would be the full question that you're asking.
I think that's implied. That's implied.
Well, you're talking about a six-year-old's question.
All right, you want to go talk to a six-year-old and go, let me tell you why that's an incorrect sentence structure.
I would have given her the short answer, but I'm talking to you, her dad.
And well,
I
don't want talk you to me. Know. It's her question. Talk to her.
Well, she's okay. Give her the answer, no.
Right.
But know in your mind that she could die later or from licking that tree. There's all kinds of viruses.
You just said, wait. You just said, if you lick a tree, no, you're not going to die. That was how you brought it up. So I'm supposed to say, you will die.
No, in your mind. You're not supposed to say it.
Oh, just
you're supposed to know it. You're her dad and you should know the full facts. Of all the dangers of licking the tree, as slow as they may be, as well as her mortality.
Right.
You need to know that. And that's my that's my bonus to you.
Well, thank you. I need to turn on my heart light, you know, which was a beautiful song that was written for E.T.
Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond sung it. Burt Bacharach wrote it.
Oh. But who wrote the lyrics then? Because Burt didn't write the lyrics.
I don't know. Oh. Are you sure?
He never wrote lyrics, right? No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't? I thought Hal Davis wrote a bunch of lyrics, but I thought he wrote.
Did Burt? I don't think Burt Bacharach ever wrote lyrics.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he did.
Well, I could be wrong.
All right. Well, your time is up. thank you, Reuben Bowling. Thank you so much for coming down.
Thank you so much. This was a great honor and really fun.
And we should start the podcast, though, right?
I didn't know we had started.
Senses Working Overtime is a HeadGum podcast created and hosted by me, David Cross. The show is edited by Katie Skelton and engineered by Nicole Lyons with supervising producer Emma Foley. Thanks to Demi Druchin for our show art and Mark Rivers for our theme song. For more podcasts by HeadGum, visit HeadGum.com or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and maybe we'll read it on a future episode. I'm not going to do that. Thanks for listening.
That was a HeadGum podcast.
Hey guys, just announced a big show in Central Park on the Summer Stage, part of the Summer Stage series, called David Cross and Super Pals. That's going to be August 8th. It's going to be amazing. Got all kinds of really cool special guests. I know we got Bob Odenkirk, Sarah Silverman, Sean Patton, Fred Armisen, many, many, many more. Go to officialdavidcross.com. That'll have all the information for that. And the pre-sale, it just went out, and the pre-sale code is FUNFUN. I believe it's all caps. FUNFUN. David Cross and Super Pals. August 8th, Central Park. Come down.